Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified, where it's your opportunity to call in, ask a question. We have a live call-in show. We have in studio with me, I'm Chuck Price, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, and we do fee-based investing. We have in the studio with us is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Stege with the Baker Colson CPA Firm.
Good morning.
I do also want to say good morning to all those who are listening to us on podcasts. We've been getting quite a group throughout the country listening to us. You can go on www.freedom970.com, hear the show live. You can also access us on Apple and on iTunes. And so if you haven't had an opportunity to do that, you can listen to the show 24/7 on Apple or iTunes. You can also go on our my website and also listen to the show as well at pfgwm.com. Well, today, third Saturday of the month, we have somebody from Harry Dent Research, and today we have Rodney Johnson. And Rodney's going to talk to us about the economy. Rodney, are you online?
Yes, I am, Chuck.
Well, listen, if somebody does want to call in and ask a question, they can call 800-990-0750 or 503-417-7626. But I've got to get right into this with you on the economy and ask you a question, because I happened to see yesterday morning when I was doing my workout at 6 o'clock in the morning and watching the Business Network, they had a survey that 2 out of 3 Americans still believe we're in recession, that we've never got out of it.
I'd believe that, because 2 out of 3 Americans are seeing their wages and other income fall behind the cost of actually living, which is, of course, your medical insurance and food. Energy certainly come down in the last 4 or 5 months, but that's the only area where people can claim relief. So, yeah, I'm sure personally it feels like a recession to most people.
Well, and then the reports that came out this week would cause all kinds of havoc on the markets, that retail sales were down. Unbeknownst to what they were pushing during December, that they were having all these fabulous numbers, and then when the numbers come out, they're not as good as everybody was saying they were going to be.
Well, they were not just not as good. I mean, they were negative. And so it was a big surprise to people that, of course, the sale of gasoline went down, because we don't typically change how many gallons we buy by the price. You know, if it went dramatically higher, yes, people would drive a little bit less. But by and large, we take the same route to work. We go to the same stores, go to the same places for movies or whatever. And so those miles cost us less. And so you would expect the spending on energy to decline, which it did. But even stripping out energy, the retail sales dropped, and people weren't expecting that. And so, yes, it throws some cold water on a lot of people who are expecting holiday sales to have been dramatically higher, you know, 4% plus, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in our very slow economic recovery, 4% is a great number. And so apparently that's not how it went.
Well, you know, out here in the great Northwest, and, of course, you're in sunny Florida, probably, what, 75 there today?
No, it's going to be a chilly 67 or 68. I mean, we're wearing jackets down here.
Oh, my gosh, I feel bad for you. I really do. I just feel terrible. Well, you know, out here in the great Northwest, we are a very mobile society, maybe more so than down in the Southeast or in the Northeast. But, you know, I talk to more and more people that, because of the price of gas, they're talking about doing road trips now on vacations instead of getting in a plane and flying somewhere. They're going to take their family in a car and take a road trip.
Well, if you do the math, I'm a big fan of road trips. I love them, done them with my family for 20 years now. But if you do the math on the gasoline versus flying, then we're in a different ball game because we're talking about a set event. You know, we're talking about a vacation. And I know you're going to be amazed by this, but as the price of energy has fallen, airlines have not lowered their ticket prices or their fuel surcharge, which they put on years ago.
See, it's
not true. I have no idea how this is possible, that they're not getting a cheaper price than the rest of us are. But clearly what they're doing is pocketing the money, so their profits have gone up dramatically, and they're not passing it along. So people are doing the math and saying, well, if the ticket's still expensive for the plane and it's a little cheaper in the car and I have my car when I get there for convenience, why not?
Well, I'll tell you, they're not all doing that because Southwest is running a promotion right now on TV up here, at least, where certain cities you can fly for $67 one way.
Yeah, but it's like to Bismarck, North Dakota and stuff. I mean, I always see those things, and it's never anywhere I want to be, you know?
Hey, we have a lot of listeners from Bismarck, so be careful out there.
Yeah, but they
well,
live
are they
here.
Still in Bismarck, or are they just from there? Because then I would notice they're no longer in that town, so
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it's kind of like Fargo, North Dakota. I mean, I was there for a week one time, and it felt like I was there for a year. It was below zero every day. It was cold. Well, listen, there's a lot going on in the economy, and why don't you just kind of give us a quick update of, I mean, Harry's got so much, you guys have so much stuff going on. I could spend all day on your website looking at videos and listening to stuff. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, right now, the big thing is interest rates, and it's something that's near and dear to the heart of investors. Certainly because it determines how much money you get on your fixed income investments, on all different types of investments. And the thought was, well, the Federal Reserve is printing a lot of new money and they're buying bonds, and so they're driving down interest rates, which of course was true, and it's what they were trying to do. But our premise was always, look, the economy is not strong. It has a lot of weakness to it, and there's just not a lot of reasons for bubbly growth. So even without the Fed, we should have exceptionally low interest rates. And sure enough, the Federal Reserve stopped printing money last October. And what happened? Interest rates continued to fall. And not just fall, but fall to historic lows. And that's something that people have glossed over. I don't know why this wasn't just a huge headline this week, that the 30-year Treasury bond, the 30-year government bond from the United States, hit the lowest level in history. That means lower than World War II, lower than the Great Depression, lower than, you know, 9/11, lower than everything. We hit the lowest rate based on nothing but a lack of foreseeable growth. And people should be very concerned about this. This is the thing we've been pointing to for so many years and saying we're in a long-term economic winter season. Doesn't mean everything goes to zero. It doesn't mean there's blood in the streets. It just means that we don't have that opportunity for really expansive growth, and it shows up in a lot of places. And one of them is very low interest rates, which allows people to borrow cheaper if they want to do it, but not as many people want to borrow. If you're not making more money, you don't want to take on debt. And the boomers are past the point where they want to borrow money to spend a lot. And so that really big group is saying, no, I'd rather pay stuff off. And the millennials, the young group, aren't in a position to where they want to or feel that they can buy homes. And so they're not borrowing. So money's cheap, interest rates are low, and it actually puts boomers further behind in reaching their financial goals because they don't get the rate of return they normally would on bonds.
Yeah, I would say that is very apropos to a book called Irrational Economics by you.
It's amazing how that kind of flows right into something I wrote before, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's something we've been talking about for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you guys started your Irrational Economic Summits, and oh my God, I remember years ago when everybody was saying Harry Dent was crazy, that he was saying we were going to enter a period of deflation. Everybody was saying he was nuts, didn't know what he was talking about, had no clue. He said gas prices were going to go down to historic low. No, he didn't know what he's talking about. Interest rates were going to go to historic low. He didn't know what he's talking about. Now all these same guys on the networks that I saw interview Harry are now saying the same thing he was saying, and they would say right after he got off the air, he was totally wrong.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And we were wrong. I mean, we own this, of course, because one of the things we thought would happen through all this is the stock market would fall dramatically. It did fall dramatically. It came back dramatically. We still think the stock market is going to roll over and go lower. But if you look at the long list of things that we put out there, the U.S. dollar would be the strongest currency in the world and would actually get stronger, not weaker. Interest rates to historic lows, just as you mentioned. Wages would actually go flat and decrease, adjusted for inflation. Certainly happened. We would be fighting deflation around the world. Certainly happened. Europe would have a problem that surprises many because they have a much older population than really anybody but Japan, and people haven't talked about that. And Japan wouldn't come out of their long-term funk. All these things, and people are right there saying, oh, well, yeah, of course, but you missed the stock market. Yeah, you know, I missed 1 out of 10. I'll take that. That's a pretty good record.
Well, one of the things, though, that we do need to say, and if you look at Harry's stuff and the stuff that you guys put out, Harry has been saying a long time that before the big market correction, the S&P was going to break through its all-time high and go to about 2150, which it hasn't done yet, and that the Dow was going to go through its high, which it did, and then rescind it back. So we still are waiting for that 2150 to see what happens, because it could very easily. And now a lot of other people out there, guys who were boo-hooing what was being said, are now saying the same thing, that, hey, 2015 could be a very strange year.
Yeah, and it's certainly feeling like it. I mean, we get into the first part of this year, and one of the things from last week, you know, you mentioned there's just so much economic news out there. The banks are reporting disappointing earnings. And that's a really big deal, because when your financial markets or your financial firms aren't earning enough money, it tells you a couple of things. It tells you that they're not getting enough traditional clients, which would be borrowers. You're not seeing those loans go out the door at a really fast clip. And you're also seeing long rates come down so much that the difference between what banks earn on loans and what they pay out on deposit, which is zero, as we all know, is getting squeezed. And so it's yet one more sign that we're entering into a really weird area of the economy that's marked by falling inflation and even deflation.
Well, something also that you didn't mention, you did kind of mention about Europe, but a couple of weeks ago, Germany went negative.
They did. The German inflation number went negative for the month, and actually on the year they're falling close to zero. And the Eurozone as a whole actually went below zero in December. So Germany had true deflation as a measure of, you know, falling prices last year in 2014. Now, as we're quick to point out, inflation and deflation have two sides. You have prices on one side, you have wages on the other. And so deflation is falling prices, it's also falling wages. And Europe's not quite there yet. As a whole, they're getting close, because it includes, of course, Greece, it includes Spain and Italy and Portugal has had tremendous problems. But they're getting closer by the day. Here in the United States, we've had flat and falling wages for some time. We've just been waiting for prices to come down, and that's certainly starting to happen here.
Well, you know, that is a concern, and I wonder about the one of the things I know in reading demographics and about car sales and stuff, the car sale numbers down the road are not going to be what they have been in the past few years. And I really wonder, when I hear that all the car companies are healthy now and they're up and rolling, I always worry when I hear these kind of news conferences where we have paid all the money back now and they're off and rolling and they're really making a lot of money.
Well, they are making money, and the way they made money, if people go back and look in, you know, 2009 when Chrysler and General Motors went bankrupt, is one of the first things that happened is the unions capitulated and said, okay, we want to lower wages, but not for anybody that's still working. We're going to have a two-tier wage system. So you can have two guys on the line. One of them has been there since before 2009, and he's making $30 an hour. And the guy hired after 2009 is making $14 an hour. And these are real numbers. And so you have these two guys on the line doing the exact same thing, but the difference in what they make is dramatic. So everybody added after 2009 is at a very low level. And so they did this, and Ford, of course, picked up the same numbers even though they didn't go bankrupt. And so the way that the car companies have added to their profits is, of course, by lowering wages of people who work. So it's like, well, there you go. You point out that, you know, our view of car sales going forward is different, and it is. We don't have this trend line nicely going up to the right, as car sales have done for the last 5 years. Our view is that car sales tend to peak around age 54, and the peak number of boomers were born in 1961. 54 years later is 2015, and so we think that we're right at that peak in car sales, and it's going to slow in the years to come, and the car manufacturers are going to be caught flat-footed in the United States. And something that people aren't paying attention to, Chuck, is one of the biggest profit centers for car makers is pickup trucks. And the oil industry is getting, of course, just, you know, decimated right now because of the low price of oil. There are a lot of new pickup trucks floating around the oil field, and I don't think they're going to be buying too many new ones in 2015 with the price of oil under $50.
Well, Rodney, this is Carl, by the way.
Hey, Carl.
I'm hoping that you can help me with what I hope is a nice conspiracy theory, but this has to do with car inventories. You know, first of all, a lot of these
are we going to channel stuffing? Is that where we're headed?
No. This is a lot of these cars are leased, and then they come back to somebody, and they get sold to somebody. And if you go out, I don't know whether it's like this in every city, but we have places where there are just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of new cars and used cars, and they're everywhere, and they're including the cars that are on the road. And it just seems to me that there are a whole lot more cars than there is you know, demand. I mean, they're obviously everybody wants selection and all that stuff. But I can't believe that they sell all of those new cars as new cars somehow. And I'm just thinking that there's like this, you know, Bermuda Triangle where there's this, you know, this place where there's, you know, they transport these cars and just so that they can artificially keep the prices up. Because, you know, you hear about used car guys saying that they haven't got enough inventory. I'm going, are you nuts? You know, there's the fundamental law of supply and demand just doesn't really seem to apply to cars. And so where is that big warehouse in the sky?
Well, I wish it was a conspiracy theory because that'd make this a lot more fun. I think it comes down to something as boring as demographics, which we always talk about, which I say is the most boring word in the dictionary and yet one of the most powerful. We went through a period of, you know, 2007, 8, 9, and then 10 in particular, where car sales dropped dramatically. But we were doing something at the same time. We were adding millions of people a year to the ranks of the working age, people who are, you know, over 16 years old. And so there's a tremendous baby boom going on with the millennials, which are the children of the boomers from, of course, the late 70s through the early 90s. And those kids were coming of age and getting into the workforce. And so that's where you're adding a bunch of people who are driving age, who are out there who, you know, want cars, of course. What we've done in the last few years, first of all, we didn't sell many in the down years because we had the dramatic drop, of course, of the economy. Then we had cash for clunkers, where we literally destroyed vehicles that were turned in, over a 250,000 cars. And then we had exceptionally low interest rates. And so we've been adding a lot of people who can buy cars now because interest rates are so low, and we're doing weird things. And this is kind of where, you know, conspiracy would come in. Car loans used to be 4 years. And it was just, I don't know, it's kind of normal, 4 years. When it went to 5 years for nicer cars that were more expensive, everybody kind of, you know, shook their head and scratched and said, well, maybe. Well, now you can get a car loan that is 6 and even 7 years long. 7 years to pay off a car. What's that thing going to be worth in 7 years? And so you're seeing people with very low interest rates who have a very long payment period, and so it makes the month-to-month payment lower. And so we keep kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for the next borrower down with a little worse credit and who needs a little lower payment to make ends meet. And that's where the conspiracy is we're foisting these car loans onto people who are further down the income stream who probably shouldn't be getting one in the first place.
Very interesting. You know, Rodney, you recently wrote an article called All Borrowing Is Not the Same. And, you know, when you guys are you look at stuff from a macro level, and I work with a cross section of individuals at a real micro level. And it's always interesting when the two perspectives intersect. And I got to tell you, Again, another one of your articles has struck a chord, and this is on the student loan debt. More and more, I have the millennials coming to me to help them set up a budget. And, you know, I mean, this is just standard stuff you would normally learn in school and so on and so forth. But they're trying to put a plan together that because there's no easy way to try to get out of the student loan problem. And you know, in your article, you really address that very well. Can you kind of describe that a little bit and how that's affecting, you know, where we're going from here?
Yeah, our point is we look at consumer credit, consumer debt as one of the big markers of how people view the economy. And it's a common thing. If you're willing to borrow money to buy something, what you're saying is, I'm going to pay it off with future income. The only way it makes sense is if you have such a dramatic need of the thing today that you'll do anything to get it, or you believe you're going to be making more money in the future so that the debt payments represent a smaller part of your income. And so it's really a view of the future when you take on debt. And so if you have a lot of consumers out there, they're working, they're buying homes, they're using their credit cards and buying things, it's a very optimistic sort of thing. And you can see how it grows the economy because you're really borrowing money from the future to spend today. So you're kind of supercharging the economy right now. Well, when you get to the other side of that and you have people who are paying down debt instead of borrowing more, it collapses or contracts the economy faster than it otherwise would, because you're not using all of the money you're earning today to consume. You're using some of it to pay back debt from yesterday. And so that kind of brings things down. When we're looking at what's going on in consumer credit, you'll see, you know, articles. There was one a few weeks ago saying, hey, consumers are expanding credit, so clearly they feel better about the economy. And that's where we said, no, you have to look within that number. First of all, you take out mortgage debt, because mortgage debt is not as high as it was before the downturn, and it probably won't be for some time. And then you look at how people are spending on credit. Credit cards actually declined two of the last 4 months and are still below where they were, credit card debt in general, in 2007. And so it's not that consumers are going out and saying, yeah, I just feel great and I'm going to buy a bunch of stuff on credit. It's that they're spending on car loans that we actually just discussed a second ago, and student loan debt is the thing that's just exploding. We've added almost half a trillion in student loan debt since 2008. I mean, half a trillion. It's such a big number, it kind of boggles the mind. And you ask, why would kids do that? And it's because they don't see a choice. They're told, gee, you have to go get a college degree or else you're never going to get a job in this economy. And so they go and they go to the university and say, well, what do I do? And they say, well, you just sign here and you get thousands of dollars. And they really don't have a concept of what borrowing $7,000 per semester, which is, of course, $14,000 a year, means when you get out of college. And then you have this $600-700 a month payment, and you're making, you know, $30,000 a year, $40,000 a year. $700 a month is a big nut, which you're finding when these people want to, you know, put out their budgets, and then they can't spend on credit. They're having a very difficult time qualifying for a loan for a home because they have this $700 a month nut that's going to last 20 years. And so all of that student loan borrowing that we're shoveling into the higher education system is very questionable in the first place, is causing a big drag on what people would normally do to reach the milestones in life, getting married, having kids, buying a home, raising their family. It's really creating this big anchor that could hold us down for quite some time.
You know, Rodney, the interesting thing there, too, is that not only are they, you know, burdened with the loan, but the law says that they're, in general, not. There's no relief whatsoever in a bankruptcy. So they are absolutely, totally stuck with that particular large loan forever. And, you know, even if they go bankrupt, they're still stuck with that particular loan. They might be able to get rid of some of their credit card debt or something. But if they do that, then they're even further behind because now they can't, you know, get any credit to do anything. So,
well, and it creates these artificial motivations. And it might be something that a lot of listeners haven't paid attention to because, of course, people listening to shows like this typically aren't, you know, 22, 23 years old. But you can do something called income-based repayment, where you can apply to a program that the federal government runs because the federal government is the only provider of student loans now and has been for a number of years. where they will say, okay, if you promise to pay us X percent of your take-home income over Y number of years, at the end of that, we'll forgive any loan balance. Well, I want to say the number is 20% over 20 years. And a lot of people look at the math and go, I really think I'm going to be doing better than that, unless, of course, you're in a high loan area like, you know, law school or maybe med school. But the kicker is, if you go into what's called, in a very gray sense, public sector, which is school teachers, which is working for a government agency, working for a regulator, then it's 10% of your income for 10 years. All of a sudden, the math on that gets a whole lot easier to make, because if you're only paying 10% and it only lasts till you're, you know, 32, 33, you're probably not paying back all of your loan. And at the end of that, it's forgiven. Well, nothing's forgiven in this world. Somebody takes a hit. The hit in that instance is the taxpayer, because it's the federal government saying you don't owe us anymore. But it creates this weird incentive for people with large student loans to go into this gray area of public sector when they otherwise wouldn't have done it. And so I think over the next several years, we're going to see a lot of people applying for those types of jobs, specifically because of their student loan balances.
Well, what do you think about the president's idea of offering free college?
No such thing as free, Chuck. And of course, we all know that.
The rest of us taxpayers are going to pay it, obviously, yeah.
Exactly. Two things. I applaud the idea, and who wouldn't, right? I applaud the idea of stronger educational ties, but I know that as presented, it's unworkable, because the idea is to funnel more people into the existing programs. And what we have right now is a mismatch between what the economy needs and what our higher education system is providing. We're getting closer to the idea of certification systems, which is where we need to be. I don't need one more person getting a degree in psychology from, you know, a small regional school in, you know, nowhere, Florida. We have a lot of those. What I need is another guy getting a certification that he is a welder who understands how to work on aluminum. And I didn't choose that out of the air. Ford is now making the new F-150 pickup truck out of aluminum. They're the first one to do that to make it lighter. Well, Jaguars were already made out of aluminum. So were some Audis. And so as you add more vehicles that are using aluminum, you're going to need more people who can fix the darn things when they get smashed up. And so why aren't we doing something to push people to a direction, or at least offer them the path of things we're going to need for many years to come, that we could put them to work right now earning money, that don't require, you know, associate degrees or bachelor degrees? You can do it with 16 months of certification in metallurgical study and welding. I mean, seems straightforward. We're just not doing it.
Rodney, that would be logical.
And we did years ago. I mean, businesses used to train their workers in a journeyman setting where they would work to become a master at something, be it a carpenter, be it a plumber, be it, you know, any of these things, a welder. And we don't do that journeyman work anymore because the relationship between the employer and the employee got broke down. And now we need to come in with some sort of intermittent step in the higher education system. We're not there, but we will get there, I'm convinced.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope we do, because we need to do something. I think one of the other things that, from a college standpoint, they really need to look at the cost of a college degree, and the college professor system needs to be changed drastically.
Well, and I'm a huge proponent of this. I mean, certainly, you look at universities and you look at the number of kids that come through, and what they've added in staff versus what they've added in students over the last 30 years is ridiculous. I mean, they've added maybe, you know, 15% more students to the student body at a university, and yet they've doubled and sometimes tripled the staff. It's like, really? I mean, and you say you're not bloated. You say that you're not, you know, just this big behemoth that's not spending money crazily, and you're supporting all of these programs. It makes no sense, but they've been able to because we're funding it, because people look around and go, look, I'd love to break the system, but I'm not going to do it with my child. My child, I still want to go to the best name university with the best program to have the best opportunities, even though I understand it's fueling the system that's so screwed up. And that's the question. Who among us as parents is willing to say no to that system to pull our kids out, to take away that funding from them so that they have to change? That's hard.
Well, eventually we're going to come to a point in our economy we're going to have to. I mean, at some point in time, we can't just continue running up this debt. at some point in time, something's going to happen.
Well, and I think you're right, and I think that it comes down to this point of we're looking at it as the last generation, 50s, and looking at our kids who are in their 20s, and we're saying, okay, we've earned well, we came through a pretty good part in the economy. Yes, we took a really good hit here lately, but we see how it can be, and we don't see that opportunity for you. And we start looking further afield than the local university because we say, well, just getting a degree doesn't cut it anymore. And so that's when I'm pointing out, like, these certification programs. I think there's a big need that could be served by these. And as they start to grow, I think they're going to pull some of the kids away from these traditional programs. And that's when the universities are going to really have to start looking at themselves and say, maybe we're not doing our best to serve our clients. Maybe we do have to change. But it just hasn't happened yet.
Well, listen, Rodney, we appreciate your time. We're going to, when we get through with this interview, we're going to give a little discussion about your website, and people can go there and they can also link to it from my website. But we appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you in a couple of months, and next month we'll be talking to Harry. So have a great weekend. We really appreciate you spending this time with us, and hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Chuck. Talk
thanks,
to you later.
Thanks, bye. Rodney. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. If you've got a question and you want to give us a call, give us a call at 503-417-7626. Or toll-free 800-990-0750. That's good anywhere in the country if you're listening to our podcast on freedom970.com. We'll be right back with Carl's comments and a special tribute to Martin Luther King Day coming up.
We do Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
Well, right before we get to Carl, we're going to give a little special tribute to Martin Luther King. We're going to play about a minute of a song that was written by Dion DiMucci called Abraham, Martin, and John. And for anybody who is a baby boomer like me that grew up in the 60s and 70s, you probably remember this song. It was very popular for a long time, and to this day is still a song. When I hear it, it brings me back to those 60s when we lost some of these people, and three of them in the song. So we're going to just play a quick minute of the song.
Looked around and he's gone. nobody here. See my old friend John. Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed the good they die young. I just looked around and he's gone.
Well, for all you baby boomers, that is a little bit of a flashback back to the 60s and early 70s. And we're going to celebrate Martin Luther King Day on Monday, so we just thought that would be a nice little tribute. If you're familiar with the song, and if you're not, you can go on YouTube or you can go on my website, and we have a link too to that. But you can go on YouTube and look up Abraham Martin and John by Dion, and it's a great song. They got a great visual there of the people in it too as well. So with that, I'm kind of giving Carl gets the cleanup spot here because he's got to come after Rodney Johnson and after that tribute to Martin Luther King. So, but you know what? That's what attorneys do. They rise to the occasion.
Well, I guess we have to take our situation as we find them. And anyway, yeah, you're right. And following those two, wow. But I did want to dovetail on directly on Rodney's talk and his area. Now, Rodney does and his organization does tremendous research all the time for years and years and years. And this particular subject that I'm going to talk about is based upon my own absolutely unsupported research, totally. And so you can jump in on it. This is the top 10 political and marketing mistakes in failing to recognize the demographics of an elderly population. So you can jump in here anytime. So I'm gonna go to number 10, and that is slow down. You know, this society just goes way too fast, and everything in marketing and government's still slow, but marketing and stuff like that, it still just goes right at you. And I think you're missing a lot of opportunity, and you can slow down the presentation a little bit. You'll be better off. Number 9, more family style restaurants with real food. You know, I mean, you know, none of that foo-foo elf food or stuff that's got little dribble stuff on the plate or you know, or green stuff that looks like the stuff that I, you know, spray Roundup on. You know, nobody wants that stuff.
How about a buffalo steak?
Yeah, you want some ham and eggs, and you want some, you know, pancakes and chicken fried steak and real food. So
now we're talking.
So you know, so let's get away from that stupid foo-foo stuff. And then number 8. Too much stuff on the TV screens. I mean, you know, they got stuff going on. I mean, we got one right here that's got, you know, Cheerios going over under terrorists. I mean, you never know what the heck's going on here. And so you know, let's kind of slow that down a little bit. Number 7, phone answering menus. You know, if you want this, ask for one. If you want, you know, I tell you, we should take whoever invented that thing and, well, never mind. Nonetheless, that's really not a good thing. Phone answering menus, if there's not a human being, or at least the first menu should be, if you really don't want to find out what the end of this menu is, please just push 0 for an operator. You know, because a lot of times the poor elderly person has no clue. You go through the 10 selections. Number 1, they don't remember number 2 or number 3. They don't remember what it was, and they don't and none of them fit what they want because they don't know exactly how to answer the question. So they need somebody to help them. So make a quick path to the helper. Number 6, make Social Security more secure. Enough said. Number 5, put buttons and dials back into devices. I am sorry. Mechanical dials and buttons work so much better. And for those of us who are losing our dexterity and our ability to do things, you know, it is so hard to manipulate, especially electronic things, that it is just, you know, you're losing an entire huge market of all of us boomer folks. Number 4, this is just like number 5. Get rid of those devices or change the devices that have no visible on-off switches nor any instructions in plain English as to how to push on the screen and what it'll do and where it'll go. You know, I mean, you read those instruction books, and surely they were written by someone with English as a second language, and I'm not talking Japanese. I'm talking nerd or something, but we're just not able to do that. And pretty soon, you know, or programmable things that, you know, you have to push up or let it blink and all this other stuff. you know, I mean, the VCR was one of those things, and you couldn't get the clock right. Now everything's like that.
So you're saying things that start out where you have to say computer?
Yes, yes.
Or OK Google?
Yes,
or
yes.
Siri?
Yeah. If you can get one where it can say, please set the time to, please play this, please turn on, please turn off. Great, yes, but you don't.
You can talk to your phone and have him say, phone home, E.T.
Oh, or, yeah, you can.
You can do that.
Yeah, of course, you might end up in New Jersey or something. So anyway, number three, walking villages. You know, planning to put villages together where everybody blissfully walks through the countryside and to the one grocery store that closes down in 6 weeks because there's not enough people living there to fill it and has no parking lot. Number two, limited parking spaces in buildings. You know, we have an assault on parking spaces, and you know, it is just simply, you know, older people, you know, they want to have a place to park where they go. And so just think of that. And number one, no more bike paths. I'm telling you that I have clientele who, you know, there is no such, you know, the planners, everybody's supposed to have a bike. Well, I got news for you. All of my clients don't even walk very well, let alone ride a bike. And if you've ever been out in our area or any area and you've tried to ride a bike around, even on a bike path, it is a terrifying experience. And, you know, and even if you've got the brightest colored, you know, Lycra suit in the whole world and fancy shoes and lights and flashing and toots and whistles, you can get smacked really bad. And if you're not in very good shape, you're not going to do it at all, especially if it's cold and wet. And, you know, and not many of us have 2 or 3 hours to go back and forth to work if we're still working at that age. So get off the bike paths, spend the money on fixing the roads, and let's start going back to where the people are. Serve the people the way they are, not the way that they wanted to be or the young people wanted to be. And remember, if you're young, you're not going to be able to ride that bike all that time either. So that's my top 10.
Well, you know, Carl, I don't often say this, but, you know, you followed two really heavy hitters, and you did a great job, and it's going to be tough for Kevin to follow that because that was great. That was really good.
I paid to come and listen to you guys.
Yeah, so. That was good, wasn't it? That was great. You know, I got to tell you, we'll give you a bill.
Well, yeah, and yeah. I just haven't figured out how to send it to all the listeners. That's right.
I see. Okay. Well, listen, if you're listening out there, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator. But I do want to tell you that if you go to my website at pfgwm.com, if you're getting near Social Security age and you want to learn how to maximize your Social Security, we have a great seminar on demand on there that you can go on the website in the comfort of your home. You can sit there and have those Cheerios like Carl was talking about, and you can be watching the news, and you can be doing this seminar. Fastest growing segment on the internet is seniors, is baby boomers. So we are going to take over the internet. We'll be right back with the tax investigator.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Thank you.
You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, instead of Chuck Price, we're going to have Kevin Stege, the tax investigator. We had a little snafu there on his introduction, but all of our faithful listeners know who Kevin Stege is, the CPA with the know-how.
Well, this ought to be this is tough to follow, and so I will get right into our 2014 retrospective on tax changes in the last year. No, I'm kidding. Put us all to sleep with that, Carl. I gotta say that's one of your top ten. That was well thought out. And if our listeners could have heard the additional comments made off the air, it was very good, very good.
But it's always great to laugh in the morning, isn't it?
It is. It is. Absolutely. And we've had a good show with Rodney and such. I've just got a few small things that we want to touch on very briefly, and then we'll get to our knowledge trust. And I'm surprised that people don't call in when we have Harry and Rodney. It's a great time to talk with a national economist and ask them there's no bad question. I mean, these they've got some very good insight and I think it's a great opportunity. So
one of the reasons why people don't call in, and I'll defend our listeners a little bit here, I think it's because they want to hear what he's having to say and they don't want to take him off course. And I think that's kind of it, because I think people want to hear, because I've asked listeners who've come in and I said, well, what do you think about calling in? And I said, well, you know, you guys ask questions and they're kind of telling what's going on. It's kind of nice to hear it, because you don't get to hear it unless you catch them on a news interview or something. So I think there's kind of a two-way sword there. But I think it'd be great if listeners did call in and ask them a question, because we ask them questions, but it'd be great for our listeners to take advantage of it. I think you're right.
Well, that explains why people always call in on my segment. I'm figuring it out now. So, we had an interesting case that came through, and this is a situation that applies to a lot of people. Get it at least several times a year, and it's a situation where maybe you're making the mortgage payments, but you are not legally on the loan or legally on the title of the house. And how does that get treated for tax purposes? And of course, the IRS has their opinion on how it should be. And it was a fairly reasonable stance that they took, but it was, kind of just a hardline stance. It finally went through the courts, and at least in one situation, they came up with a decision on it, and it was a pro-taxpayer decision from the courts, and so that's a good thing. And this was a case where I'll just kind of read the circumstances, because you might find yourself in something similar probably sometime in your life. But this was a fella named Van Fan, and he's down in California. And in 2008, he moved into a house on a 3-acre ranch to help his mother, who was unable to care for the home. And she was in the process of going through a divorce, so there was some financial stresses on the family related to that. As part of the settlement, his mother agreed to pay the father in exchange for the father's interest in the property. Well, Van Fan decided, he couldn't buy the property, so on and so forth, but he decided to move in and take care of the place, and he made all of the payments. But as you can see, he's nowhere on the title. He's nowhere on the mortgage loan. He's not legally tied to anything here. And yet he went ahead and took a fairly large mortgage interest deduction on his tax return for all of the payments he made. I'm assuming the mortgage 1098 came in his mother's Social Security. And the tax court said that you get the deduction. You are an equitable owner. And Carl's telling me I'm choosing the right words out of the air here. So you are the equitable owner, and it's for all intents and purposes, you fit the bill for having taken on the risk. They eventually did have the intent of putting him on the title as inheritance, taking the house, so on and so forth. So anyway, a good case for the taxpayer.
So you had a beneficial interest.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
That,
you know, the interesting thing is that this is I've seen these various situations. In fact, I don't know, about 6-7 months ago, you and I had that same discussion, Kevin, about one that was somewhat like that. And actually, I asked you because I didn't know. I said, wow, how does this work? And you worked your magic and found some stuff. But I think that one of the things I see in my practice, and I'm sure you do too, are there are lots of situations where people who are you know, trying to help mom out, or maybe it's the other way. Maybe it's mom trying to help the kids out, and for whatever reason, the person who's really making the payment isn't entitled to the property and all that stuff, but they're paying the money. And so, it's kind of an interesting situation.
Exactly. The scenario I see all the time is the kids can't qualify for the loan for one reason or another, probably student loan debt, but we'll leave that one to be. Can't qualify for the loan. The parents get the loan. The kids are actually the ones who are moving into the house. The kids are the ones who are actually making the mortgage payment, either directly to mom and dad or directly to the bank. And now you've got property taxes and mortgage interest. And I think this helps clarify that facts and circumstances, if it's your home, if it's your residence, even though your name may not be on there, mm-hmm. I think we've got a good position. So just to keep abreast with the winds that are blowing in Washington, it looks like there is
going... You mean
going,
all that hot air?
It's, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, things. Yeah. It looks like they're putting together another attempt at tax reform. And what they've done is they've established 5 working groups. And this was put together, I think, just this week. Orrin Hatch and Ron Wyden are heading up this attempt at further tax reform. So it'll be bipartisan, should be interesting to see, or nonpartisan, I should say, how this works out. But they're going to focus on the 5 groups are individual income tax, business income tax, savings and investment, international tax, and I, of all of them, do not know what this 5th one means, community development and infrastructure.
It means spending more money.
Oh, where the money goes afterwards.
Spending more money.
Must be. So, and they've appointed a Democrat and a Republican to each one of these committees, these groups, and then they're going to report as a whole, and they're going to attempt to have a comprehensive revamp. And, of course, this has always been going on, and we'll see if this attempt has any more muster than prior attempts. So.
Well, the last time that that anything like that was ever successful was back in 1986 with Senator Packwood and I forget whoever else was around, but he was kind of one of the authors of that thing. And then it gradually a lot of the good stuff in that sort of gradually got eroded over over time. Now we got to shrink it back.
Well, and you had TEFRA back in the early 70s. TEFRA, the Tax Reform Act, and then they updated it in the 80s. But, you know, we really haven't had a we've had some major things in the estate taxes that have been positive. But from an income tax standpoint, I think the government needs to simplify this thing for a lot of people. And I don't know the answer. And I think the problem with the politics is you got people that generally don't understand – have no reality of what the average person's going through because they've been in office too dang long and they don't know.
For the majority of taxpayers, it's not good that our tax code is so complex that you have to pay somebody to prepare your taxes. There's a place for business taxes, business accounting, maybe your high net worth individuals, complicated situations. But when it comes down to your working middle class, the tax code should be straightforward enough that you should be able to file your returns no problem.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to wind it down here, Kevin. So how does somebody get a hold of you?
We're at baker-colson.com. My phone number is 503-666-5569.
Okay. And Carl?
warrenallen.com, 503-255-8795.
And mine is at pfgwm.com. And if you go on there, you can look at the webinar, the seminar on demand on Social Security. And I highly recommend it if you're, you know, 5 to 10 years away from retirement and you want to be planning what you're going to do. You really need to start looking at it right now. And if you're closer than that, you definitely ought to be looking at it. I do want to say that you can hear us on iTunes. The show is on there, also on Apple. And also you can get us on the – you can go on freedom970.com and hear our show. You can also go on my website and hear the show. And there are links there to Carl and Kevin's sites as well. And also, each of us do have various newsletters and things that you can go. So I would suggest you look at the sites, and if something is of interest to you, then you click on it and contact us. More and more, our business contacts are coming from the internet, and I think it's going to continue. Particularly now that with the hand devices, there are things you can do that you couldn't do before, and you can watch your TV favorite TV show. You can watch a sporting event. Got to say, last weekend of the NFL, let's just go quickly around. Kevin, you're the only one that's got the chance to do your preseason prediction. I believe preseason you picked New England and the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
You're sticking with that?
I am. I think Indy might give New England a run, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm still sticking with my Seahawks, but unfortunately Denver lost, so I'm going to go with New England. And Carl, Buffalo was out before it started. But
there's always next year. There's always next.
But you have a new coach.
Oh,
got a new
coach. Yeah, Rex Reed.
Rex Ryan.
So, yeah, Rex Ryan.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Well, I tell you, I actually like Rex Ryan, and I liked his dad when he was at the Chicago Bears with Mike Ditka before he became a head coach and had a great defense, and all of the Ryans have a great defensive mentality. The two brothers are twin brothers. And their dad was a great defensive coach. So who knows? Buffalo may give, you know, somebody a run for their money and get in the playoffs next year.
They need a quarterback.
They need that and more. Yeah. Listen, we're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week.
And thank you for listening. And we'll catch you next week.
Good. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Simplified.